just put it there.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know if I can follow up with that and make it interesting, but I'll start with my favorite joke. All right. So there was a doctor, a priest, and an engineer, and they're all playing golf. And in front of them, there's a foursome that's going super slow, and they're getting irritated with them. So they call the range marshal over, and they're like, "Hey, what can you do about these guys?" And the range marshal's like, "Well, those are the four blind firemen that lost their eyesight saving our clubhouse last year, so they can play whenever they want. No problem." And so the doctor, immediately feeling bad, he's like, "Hey, let me go talk to some of my colleagues, see if we can help them." And the priest is like, "You know what, I'm going to go to my congregation. Maybe we can say some prayers, get some donations or something." The engineer, he's just kind of like staring down the fairway, analyzing them. He looks over at the marshal and is like, "Why can't they play at night?" So, yeah. That's probably the best part of my speech, so you can check out now. All right. So, yeah, as you can guess, I'm an engineer and project manager. I work in oil and gas and by trade. But most folks, you know, tell me I don't like act like an engineer, which is a big compliment to me, really. So, now for my real job. I've been married 20 years this week. I have two beautiful teenage daughters and a 12-year-old son. Very blessed, very busy, and very proud of them all. One thing to know about me right up front is I was born with a 40% hearing loss. And so I didn't have hearing aids growing up. And so I learned to receive and communicate and perceive the world differently than most people. So like I'm very intuitive to nonverbal body language. I can read a little bit of lips. I pick up on vibes from people and I communicate that way. And you know, I think that's a pretty cool gift. RJ says it's a scary gift because I can read him across the room. Right. Now, I could spend the whole day telling you stories about my childhood, and it's a really a target-rich environment. But for the sake of time, I'll skim through it. I was born in Lubbock. My parents had me when they were 19 years old. They were still kids figuring life and live at themselves. They divorced when I was a toddler. And the next 6 or 7 years of my life were really chaotic. I bet you I lived in, we were poor. We lived in apartments and trailer parks and such like that. And I bet you I lived in 10 different places, sometimes with my mom, sometimes my dad, grandparents, aunts, uncles, friends. My family was far from perfect. And I can assure you that during this time, I learned a lot about alcohol. I learned about drugs, divorce, remarriage, re-divorce. I learned about police, I learned about fighting, and I truly experienced a lot of things. However, I'll say this, I'm very glad for these experiences. And the reason is because I wasn't excited or curious about any of this stuff when I grew up, especially drugs or alcohol. I'd already seen what it can do to a person, what it can do to a family. And so as I grew up, I was just like, not gonna have any of that. That said, again, I'm very grateful to my family because despite how messy it was at times, they were always very loving to me, and they told me they loved me, and nothing really bad happened to me other than what was going on around me, and they were so humble and honest when they had their own mistakes and issues that came up. My family, and especially my mom, spoke a lot of truth into me. She would say things like, "Chad, you're better than this. You're going to break this cycle of poverty. You're smart. You're going to do good things." And that's so powerful for a child to hear, you know, especially when you're in a chaotic situation like that. At about 10, things stabilized a bit when my mom remarried a great man named Mark, and they had two sons, and so now I had two brothers. I was a typical stepkid for a bit. I was a complete pain, but Mark, he stuck with us, and he chose me, right? But still, there was this byproduct of that instability for me. During this period, for as long as I can recall, I always felt like my job was to not cause problems, don't ask for things, and certainly don't cost money. And so I did those things and became a bit of a people pleaser, and I became super self-reliant and independent. And I'll share a quick story to illustrate this independence. When I was 13, the principal called me to his office, and my mom was there, and you know, I was like, it could have been anything at 13. And he said, "Chad, your dad has been shot." He's like, He's alive and he's in ICU, but we don't know more. And so obviously I'm like, what's going on? So many questions, and obviously I was a bit shocked and scared. Now at this point in time, my dad was single, and I would go visit him every other weekend. And he always had different women around, a lot of them, you know, covered in glitter, if you know what I mean. And so I didn't really know if he was alone or not. And my mom and him didn't really keep touch much. And so as we were driving up to the hospital, she was telling me, you know, don't worry, I'm going to stay with you and all that stuff like that. But the first thing I considered is I didn't want to bother her with the awkwardness of going into the hospital with her ex-husband and some random woman we didn't know. And plus, I considered that she had these two toddlers at home, and, you know, they didn't have a lot of money to have babysitters and stuff. And so I was like, no, Mom, I got this. And so, you know, here I am at 13. I go into the hospital alone, figure out where my gunshot dad is, finding out he's by himself, and I'm the first one there, and I'm talking to these nurses that are, they're really confused about why this kid is there, not an adult. And it's kind of a, looking back, it's kind of a weird situation, right? And but that's the way I was. The good news is my dad lived, and after several surgeries, he went on to recover about a year later. I witnessed a really physically strong man recover through some tough things. And the bad news, however, is he really started drinking harder, and he went on to a lifelong alcoholism battle after this. And so on that topic, I did the math, and from my grandparents' generation down to my generation, one out of three people in my family are addicts. And so either drugs or alcohol. Seven have been hospitalized. Four have died. One shot himself. And one is currently in federal penitentiary, which is my youngest brother. So don't have time to go into all the stories and how that's impacted me over the years. But an interesting thing for me that I've sort of learned, you're dealing with family members that are addicts, is it's a lot like the steps of grief recovery, because it feels like you lose them. And so you go through denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, some apathy after a bit, and then eventually you move on to empathy for these people. And it's just such a hard thing. So back on track, again, my childhood experiences made me very self-reliant and also very controlling. Not controlling in a way that I had to have my way. It's just that I didn't like drama. And so all my life choices reflected a way. I was like, well, how can I minimize drama in my life and make it stable? And so that manifested itself in my life in a lot of ways. As I went through high school, I did all the right things. I was popular. I was on the baseball team. Had a lot of girlfriends. I was on the wrestling team. Had straight A's. And I still mixed in all the keg parties and fun along the way. My parents couldn't pay for a car or college for me. So I worked and paid my own way through. And I did really well in college. Again, I had a lot of fun, but I managed to get a mechanical engineering degree. And I became the first in my family to graduate college. Got a good job. Moved away to the big city. Met my wife, Christy. And I was checking all the boxes of life. Now, up to this time, I had gone to church occasionally, mainly to make my grandma happy. And I called myself a Creaster because I only went to church on Christmas and Easter. Right? However, when we had our first child, something happened, and I felt this real serious tug to go to church. And it wasn't for me. I didn't know where it came from, but I just felt that I had to be doing that. And a lot of new people started coming into our lives. Co-workers, church family, neighbors. They wanted to hang out and be with us, and they were just good, solid people. And so we got plugged into the local church. And although I never had one of those, you know, ultra-emotional revival moments, it was more of a slow fade at this point in my life, I truly believe that Jesus Christ freely gave saving grace, that he was crucified, died on the cross, and resurrected 3 days later. I truly believe that at this point. And it was a great season of growth. But looking back now, again, the theme was the same. I was checking boxes, which was to go to our church on Sunday, mixing some Bible studies. I'm really good at controlling the steps and doing the work. The funny thing about control is you think you have it until you don't, right? 2015 is a year that changed me. Within a span of a few months, my grandfather, my dad, and my stepdad, Mark, all died suddenly and unexpectedly. My dad was 58. Mark, he was just 52. these men meant so much to me and spent so much investing in me. The three biggest father figures in my life were gone in a blink, and this was hard. It just pulled the rug out from underneath me. I'd lost control. But I fell into doing what I do well, which is I went turbo mode doing all things, took on the estate task, trying to be all things to all people, mixing in some jokes along the way. I thought I needed to just go through it to get through it, if that makes sense. But when night came, I couldn't sleep. I was experiencing something new to me. I started feeling extreme guilt about not being there for my widowed mom. I was still trying to be great at my work, my family, my social life, being part of the church. The basic cycle for me over the next couple years was I would hammer, then I would crash from exhaustion. And I was spinning so many plates, and I found myself being sad about all kinds of other things, like my children growing older, and I found myself becoming very indecisive, toiling over decisions I used to could make in my sleep. And instead, I'm just getting overly anxious about everything. And I'm just like, I couldn't figure out what's going on in my head. And I even went to a counselor a couple times. And this was a very hard thing for me to do, to submit and go to a counselor. However, I did learn some things, that the busyness was just an avoidance, and it was delaying the healing and grieving that I needed to do. And then also learned there's a saying that's so true. If you're living in the past, you're going to feel depressed. If you're living in the future, you're going to feel anxious. So you need to live in the present, which is much easier said than done, right? John 14:15-17 says, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments, and I will ask the Father, and he will give you another helper to be with you forever, even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive because it neither sees him nor knows him. You know him, for he dwells with you and will be in you." So what is a helper? I didn't know what that meant, but it sounded good. And so I started trying to listen to that. And little by little, over the next few years, my self-reliance, which was my old system of living, if you will, was getting chipped away at. And this illusion of control that I had was being broken down. And it was slowly being replaced with some peace. And I hope maybe a little bit of character. And I was noticing more awareness of joys and positives. I was very aware of all those folks out there loving on us, and relationships became more of a priority. And in 2021, we found out my wife Christy had cancer in her neck. And I can only describe the news of how it made me feel physically right then, which was like I had a narrowing of my vision, a flush of heat in my neck, and a slight buzzing in my ears, and somewhat listening to the doctor. But somewhere, and I can only attribute it to my helper promised in John 14, gave me peace, and I felt a bit of calmness set in. And I would occasionally still get freaked out, but overall the calmness remained over the next few weeks of endless doctor's appointments. Her first surgery at MD Anderson was when the world was in full COVID lockdown. Hardly anyone could go in. It had limited access. They were scanning my forehead at the entrance just to get in, and it had the whole hospital complex had this really ominous, cold feel to it. The surgery started in the late afternoon, and in the waiting room in MD Anderson, they have this scrolling screen that gives the status of patients in surgery. It'll say, you know, waiting, prep, surgery in progress, recovery, all done. And I kept watching this screen as dozens and dozens of others kept finishing up, and then well past the estimated time, only my wife's name was up there. Surgery in progress just kept flashing at me. It was just her name was the last one. And for hours. And 7 hours later, I think, I really don't know the time, but it was late. The doctor came in, and I could tell he was exhausted. Remember, I have that skill of reading people's body language real quick. And I could tell it was painfully obvious it wasn't going well. And so he and I were the only people in this giant dark waiting room late at night. And he tells me that the cancer is way more spread than anticipated. And he proceeded to give me two options, neither of which I liked. I felt that same buzzing and flush of heat in my neck. And I had this horrific mental image of her, you know, laying on the table with her neck filleted open. And it was just a heartbreaking image to me. And I made the hard decision on the spot, all alone. And hurting, I hit my knees and prayed for her. For the doctors, and it felt real. It was the most real prayer I have ever said. And I believe I finally truly surrendered and let go in that moment. and the supernatural calmness set in. And right then, within seconds, I started receiving all these text messages from loved ones that, it was just perfectly timed. The hospital wouldn't let me stay the night because, again, it was COVID. And well past midnight, I had to leave her there all alone. And that was really hard. You know, I'm walking down these empty, dark hallways. And it has that really weird hospital sterile smell to it. And empty streets. And it wasn't comfortable at all. But I had finally accepted some help. And fast forward to today, 5 years later, and Christy still has cancer. We're still in this waiting game. The medications have been hard on her. This lingering, unsolved, uncontrollable situation has taken its toll, and that's the truth. But there's no way I could have done this alone. And 2 Timothy 2-3 says, "Share in suffering as a good soldier of Christ Jesus." And although I love the idea of this, I sure don't want to sign up for any more suffering. Soldiers are trained to suffer pain. They're trained to go into enemy territory and survive. And soldiers are there to serve others. And it's pretty funny to me now looking back, but I like exercise and I'll excitedly go through a tough CrossFit workout. I feel real proud of myself about doing it. Embracing that pain and soreness. But if I lay off the gym for even a week, all the gains are gone. You know, they're just these fleeting physical gains. Yet when it comes to emotional and maybe spiritual pain, I avoid it. Yet it's also a type of exercise, if you will, right? I don't embrace it and celebrate it. But instead of physical strengths, this is building up character, and emotional strengths. And these gains are permanent. So now, through no effort of my own, I believe God's teaching me to stand in these places of pain. And instead of just absorbing it, which I used to do and I failed miserably at, give it back over to him because he's going to be the ultimate grave for that pain. And because I can't bear it alone. And whether it's dealing with the aftermath of childhood divorce, a gunshot dad, drug addicted family members, losing your fathers, a brother in the federal pen, or even supporting a spouse that has cancer, I still don't like the pain, but I've learned to appreciate the gained perspective from it and being able to relate to others and find things. And I find that the things used to seem big now seem a lot smaller. That's powerful. That's all I've got. Thank you for listening.
All right, thank you, Chad. Ben, you want to come on up? Yeah, thank you.